Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The Republican National Convention is around the corner. It starts Monday. And the speculation is rampant into who Donald Trump will choose as his vice president. We'll get to that. And speculation is also rampant as to whether the Never Trump movement is going to allow its delegates freedom to vote for whomever they please. Paul Ryan is studiously avoiding truly praising Trump. He basically says he supports Trump because, well, he's not Hillary Clinton. And my guest today is a Republican strategist I've known more than a decade now, right? His name is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifant Strategies right here in Northern Virginia. And Mike's my go-to guy to kind of understand sort of the middle-of-the-road Republican. I don't consider him a crazy conservative, but he's not a moderate Republican either. So he sort of brings me my Republican zeitgeist. And my guess, Mike, is that you're someone who will vote for Trump over Hillary, but still aren't too happy about it. Is that fair?
Oh, I think it's fair to say, Mark. First of all, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on. I look forward to hopefully not disappointing our audience by not being as articulate and as insightful as you just promised I would be, because there are a lot of confusing things out there that require some more inside information than perhaps I would have at this particular point in time. But let me say, in answer to your question, Trump was not my first choice.
Nor your second?
Nor my second choice, but he is my choice now.
And, Marco Rubio your first choice?
Marco, I voted for Marco Rubio but before that, I was a Scott Walker guy, and I didn't get the chance to vote for Scott Walker because
he dropped out. So you were Scott Walker, and then Marco Rubio, and then when it came down to Cruz, Kasich, and Trump, you would have been for.
You know what? I just sat that one out. I didn't think Cruz had a snowball's chance in hell.
And Kasich less.
I didn't think Kasich had a snowball's chance in hell. I thought that if there was a chance to, you know, hit a home run, this is not a thread the needle. This is like catch a wave and hit a home run with Trump. He was the only one that had that possibility, but the other ones were all headed for President Hillary Clinton.
So have you publicly endorsed Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, I've talked about how I'm going to vote for him. I think I actually sent him $100 too. So I guess that
$100.
Puts me on
$100. Wow.
Well, we'll see,
that might have doubled his fundraising
comes.
Efforts there. there is a lot of uncertainty in your party, and I don't know if you saw. Did you see Paul Ryan's town hall on CNN? I think it was last night or the night before.
I didn't see it live, but I did see, I read characterizations of it, and I saw portions of it.
Well, what you found there were Republicans all over the map. There were Republicans who were angry at Paul Ryan for insufficiently supporting Donald Trump, and there were Republicans who were angry at Paul Ryan for endorsing Donald Trump at all. Voters who said, I'm a die-the-wool Republican, I've voted Republican all my life, I believe in conservative principles, I cannot vote for Donald Trump, and this woman talked about voting for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. Do you think your party will become more unified after the convention? I assume that's the goal.
Yes. I mean, these things happen as a matter of course after the convention, after you have an official nominee, after the raison d'etre for the Never Trump forces fades away into the woodwork and they're sitting there, you know, holding an empty glass. They have to decide what to do. Most of those people are intelligent enough to know that a vote for Gary Johnson is a vote for Hillary Clinton. Not all of them will realize that. Some of them will fall on their sword and they'll pretend that they're principled, but what they really are is sort of misinformed and ignorant about the political process. We live in a binary political system. And the Gary Johnson choice is a faux choice. Any other choices out there, and for your party,
and I
too,
say the same for Jill,
you know,
Stein.
Yeah, I mean, the Green Party, it's just, you know, it's Nowheresville. So we live in a binary system. And Donald Trump will have, I believe, a very unifying convention. If he knows anything, it's television and stagemanship and showmanship. It will be a very enthusiastic, unifying convention. There will be most of the party unified coming out of that convention. There will be a few stragglers that come on as the months unfold and they realize their options are limited. But we're never going to get to 100% because there are people who think they are bigger than history and they're going to prove it.
If
I agree with you, and I agree with you entirely, that a vote for a third party is a non-vote. It's like not going to the polls at all. It makes you feel better. But I say the same about those few. And there are, I think, much fewer in my party who are diehard Sanders supporters who haven't come around Hillary Clinton. I think there's more in your party. But I'm not just talking about a few people who call into my radio show. The people in your party, let's just name them, George Will. I mean, when I think of intelligent conservative commentator, that's the name that comes to mind. I suspect the ghost of Liam F. Buckley is another intelligent commentator who's going around his grave a few times. Both the former presidents, George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. and Jeb Bush, whom he ran against, are not endorsing. Mitt Romney, the nominee from last time, is not endorsing. And John McCain seems to be reluctantly endorsing, even though today, in today's Washington Post, Donald Trump apparently still won't apologize for saying he wasn't a war hero. So I'm not sure what McCain's doing, but this isn't a typical, well, you know, I liked my guy in the primary kind of presumptive nominee, is it?
No. Look, everybody has their reasons, and I'll just go through the examples you gave.
Okay.
The pundits, you know, the people who sit there and make a living off actually offering their opinion on things. God forbid that, you know, somebody should be so lucky as to have that job, huh, Mark?
It's a great job.
Anyway.
But George Will is respected. So, I mean, he's not exactly a fly-by-night kind of guy.
He is, but he's closely associated in this case with the National Review people. The National Review people, as you might recall, went to the mat back in May or April or something like that with their Never Trump effort. They published an entire special edition dedicated to describing why Donald Trump could not and should not be the nominee of the party. And they failed. And so they're out on that limb, and they're probably not even looking for a way to get back off that limb. They've already sawed it off, and you know, they're out by themselves.
But even that's rare. I can't recall the National Review ever doing that about any Republican nominee, and they've been around for
decades. No, but they still had choices at the time, which was a real shame, because they had, they had 6-7 people still in the race when they did this. And rather than come down for somebody, they made a strategic mistake of coming down against someone. Let's move to the Bushes. I understand why the Bushes as a family are against Trump. Look,
because he insulted Jeb too much?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think it's because he has shredded George Bush's foreign policy and just, you know, gone to the mat and said that essentially the entire success of Bush presidency is illegitimate because of the aftermath of what Obama did afterwards. And he's holding the wrong person accountable.
There's something incredibly ironic about the fact that Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq and Donald Trump claims now he's against it. Though, by the way, at the time, he was a little more unsure. But at least their policy is going in. Of course, Hillary Clinton regrets her vote, to be fair, and Donald Trump was actually much more supportive many years ago. But at least on record, there's crazy irony there.
Right. There are. It's sometimes, you know, politics makes strange bedfellows and you jump in and out. Let me give you one last anecdote.
What about Mitt Romney? I mean, he's an honorable man.
I don't know where Mitt's coming from on this, other than perhaps he still holds out hope against hope that if the convention deadlocks, if enough delegates can be broken off from the from the Trump commitments, that the convention will turn to him. It's not going to happen.
I agree, it's not going to happen. But if your theory is correct, and he's only holding out for the nomination at the convention, then your theory would hold that 3 weeks from now, when Donald Trump does become the Republican nominee, Mitt will come aboard.
Unless he feels like he's put himself so far out on a limb that he can't get back. I think he's
gone pretty far out on that limb.
You know what? Mitt Romney, I voted for him. I supported him. I believed him. I think he was a great man. I think he would have made a great president. He was an awful candidate. And I think that, he doesn't have a substantial, hard, widespread grounding in the Republican Party. I think that his only reason for being today is that he was the nominee in a previous cycle, and he just doesn't have the influence nor the respect, unfortunately, that someone of his stature deserves, because he's just not been there forever, and he's not a senior statesman. He's a one-time candidate.
So let me ask you to predict. As I understand Republican Party rules, if the majority of the platform committee rules that the delegates can vote their conscience, they can vote their conscience. No one seems to think a majority of the platform committee will rule that way. However, as I understand the rules, if one quarter, or 28 out of 112, at least that's what I read, of the platform committee believes in letting the delegates vote their conscience, and one quarter, that could well be Cruz supporters and Kasich supporters, Rubio supporters, that minority report will go to the floor and at least be voted on by the entire delegation. By the entire convention, exactly. Did I get my rules right? And if so, do you think it will happen? Both, do you think the platform committee will give that minority report? And is that good for the party?
First of all, no one knows what a conscience clause really means in this context.
Carter and Kennedy had this fight in 1980. That's the last time I've heard of it.
Right. And it just...
And lost. Kennedy tried to get the conscience clause and lost.
Right. And nobody knows, even if there was a conscience clause, no one knows what it really means. I don't think it's going to happen, and I'll tell you why.
You don't think it'll come out of the platform committee and be voted on, or you don't think...
I don't know. I don't think there's going to be...
even a vote.
Let me take that back. There may be a conscience clause. I don't know what it's going to mean. It won't mean anything until the convention itself decides what it means, and that will be done by a majority vote of the convention. If it's contested, if it's try and exercise, we don't know. I don't think there will be a minority platform report. And the reason that I get that is, you know, the Never Trump forces have not really been effective in the platform committee yet. In the rules committee, they've been they just haven't risen to that 25% level. And I was talking two nights ago with the head of the Virginia delegation to the convention, who is a hardcore Cruz guy. If there's anybody who would love to see this convention overturned and go to Cruz, it would be him. And he told me that he just doesn't see the fact that the possibility of a rules revolt. It's just such an unlikely possibility at this point.
If the committee wasn't going to people other than Trump, it doesn't look like Trump was spending much time on the committee either. There's an article in today's Washington Post talking about the Republican platform. And it's pretty standard Republican platform. Doesn't look like Trump tried to push it in any way, shape, or form. When the Republican platform disagrees with Donald Trump, it appears people just did what is pretty standard Republican platform. Does this mean anything?
No. Absolutely nothing.
Okay. We're wasting our time even talking.
No. My favorite anecdote was Senator Bob Dole back in 96, when there was all kinds of controversy being ginned up over, was this part of the platform controversial or was that part controversial? And after it was written, one of the reporters went to Senator Dole and said, Senator Dole, the platform committee says this, you know, what do you think? And Dole's answer was, don't know, haven't read it, don't intend to.
Okay, so that's got it. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, I want to talk about vice presidential choices, and I also want to encourage people to call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We're going to talk anything about Republicans, Republican National Committee, Donald Trump, the convention, Paul Ryan. I got my standard Republican guest on here. Ask him any tough questions you want. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive. Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. The Republican National Convention begins next week. I will be reporting on it, of course, live in Cleveland. And, I won't be in Cleveland, but I'll be reporting on it as it goes ahead, live in Cleveland. I don't think I want to be in Cleveland. I'm a little concerned, frankly, about violence in Cleveland. I want to talk about that in the second half of the hour. But for now, my guest, Mike Lane, who is a longtime friend of mine, someone who I met actually debating Republican-Democratic things. Disagree on many things, but we agree on the need to discuss our disagreements agreeably. And frankly, Mike, I look to you just for sort of insight into your party, and I'm really glad you're back here on the Inside Scoop. I want to talk about the Veep Stakes. That's what all the press is talking about. You told me in the break you think Donald will announce on Friday. Did you hear that for sure, or is that a rumor?
No, that's the current rumor. I picked that up about 90 minutes or 2 hours ago, and I think it's just because there was some discussion that it would be midweek, and now since we don't appear to be on the precipice of an announcement, they'll give themselves another 48 hours to work it up.
So the big money is on Governor Pence of Indiana, and I have to admit, maybe I have conventional wisdom, but I think that's the one he's going to pick. He's a former governor. He worked in the House. Donald Trump needs someone with government experience. He's a conservative. He's an evangelical. He can appeal to the Cruz voters. I have to say that I think he'll rile up the gay community. It's interesting, about the only people Donald Trump has not yet to insult is the LGBT community. He's insulted Muslims and Mexicans and women and others. But he hasn't really been particularly anti-gay. Pence, because of that Indiana law, he has that. I shouldn't use the words cross to bear, but you get my point. That's the only real negative I see, although I think it is a negative. Do you agree with me that Pence is the first choice?
Well, the tea leaves would certainly indicate that. Here's what gives me pause on that. For a year now, Donald Trump has been surprising people by not following what the tea leaves say and coming out with a surprise statement at the end of every process. If this holds true to form, then the Pence Gingrich two leading candidates would be sort of red herrings. Well, no, but he's been talked about and, you know, he's been interviewed and you know, it's I think candidly,
I'd be willing to bet a lot against Gingrich.
I'll say it. I think most Republicans would think between Trump and Gingrich, there's too many ex-wives floating around. So,
yeah, I think six wives and all been cheated on.
No, I don't think the current ones. I think six wives and four.
Four have been cheated on. 4 out of 6 that we know of. Thanks, Mark, for telling us that. What about his favorite lapdog, Chris Christie? That he's loyal. You know, he's got that loyalty down.
See, I think for two brash New Yorkers or two brash Northeasterners probably
New York,
not a
New
good
Jersey,
match.
New Jersey, no difference,
not,
right?
Not a good match for the country.
So who's left?
Well, as you point out, Mike Pence.
Mike Pence is the one I think is going to choose.
Okay,
but let's say it's not Pence.
Who else? I mean, there's people that may not have been talked about yet.
Governor Mary Phelan of Oklahoma.
No, she's been talked about. Her name's been floated, so that wouldn't be it. How about Tim Scott from South Carolina? How about
African American Republican?
Right,
conservative.
How about?
I don't think so. You know why? I think that would make the white supremacists who support Donald Trump not support the ticket. And I think he wants them.
Yeah, it's pretty small potatoes.
No, I don't think it's small potatoes. Look, Donald Trump just this week refused, and I think he's the first candidate in decades, to refuse to speak before the NAACP. Traditionally, McCain and Romney did it, and they didn't get a lot of black votes. I think he's appealing to a certain racist element on purpose.
You know what, Mark? You can see a conspiracy theory into that.
Why isn't he speaking there?
He's not speaking because his own convention is the same day that the NAACP convention is. There's just absolutely no way he's going to be able to pull out of Cleveland and go to the NAACP.
That's true. He could pre-tape or something, but it's the same day?
It's the same week. You know,
it's what, Friday?
In fact, the NAACP was making the comment that, gee, it's only a short way for him to come from Cleveland to Cincinnati where we're meeting. We don't understand this. In point of fact, you know, at a convention, minute distracted out of your schedule.
No, it's true. I didn't know. That actually made – it really is this week.
It is this week.
Oh, is it this week or next week?
This week. No, it's next
week.
It conflicts directly with the Republican convention.
That's actually the best response I've heard as to why he's not going to the convention. That actually makes some sense. We got to take a break. Folks, if you want to call in and ask Mike some questions, please do so. When we come back, I want to talk about the possibility of violence in Cleveland. I don't think it's understated. It's something that concerns me. We'll find out if it concerns my guest. Does it concern you? 888-488-MARK. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifant Strategies. He's my go-to Republican. He and I have been debating for more than a decade now, Mike. We're showing our age here.
It brings back memories, Mark.
It does. It does. I always, you know, waving my Constitution around. And
I remember, you know, back when you were doing television on a regular basis with me, and you had that one clip where you threw the Constitution over your shoulder. It made for great video.
It really did. It really did. And then there was the one time I was shaking my Constitution at you, and I swear it was accidental. It left my hand and hit you in the face. But again, good video. Speaking of far more serious acts of violence, I'm concerned about Cleveland. I'm not particularly concerned about Philadelphia, I must say. I'm not really worried about violence there, though it's always possible. But with the anger in many minority communities about shootings of African-American men, with the recent terrorist attack in Dallas by the unhinged domestic terrorist who was going after white officers, people are on edge across the country, in cities after cities. And if I can't think of a more enticing place for an anarchist or a terrorist than Cleveland, particularly given Donald Trump's history of making statements that many, including many in your party, consider to be racist. Are you afraid of either unrest in the streets or such a heavy police presence that it looks like the place is under lockdown?
The first answer is I expect to see unrest in the streets. There are groups and organizations, most recently the new Black Panther Party, that has indicated that they are going to shut the convention down by any means they can. I expect them not to be successful. I expect that the police security plan will be adequate and will be effective. I do know that after Dallas, there was just an absolute surge in volunteer policemen from around the country calling into Cleveland saying, hey, you know, you asked us once for volunteers and I didn't do it, but I want to be there now. And so there should be enough of a police presence, and the security plan should be adequate. Nonetheless, you never can tell when things might get out of hand. I can tell you, I think you didn't mention it at the top, so I'll tell our audience now that I will be in Cleveland for the convention.
Oh.
And
you can even report to us from there if you like.
I could give you a report from the convention,
okay.
Sure. And I'll be there on behalf of a client. And I won't disclose who that client is now because it's confidential. But the facts are that we had a meeting yesterday of the entire delegation from this client that's going to be at the convention. And not an insignificant part of the pre-convention meeting was going over our personal security plan and how we are going to react, you know, as a group if something happens, where our go-to spot will be if we can get there, what kinds of personal behaviors should be exhibited outside the security zone or not exhibited outside the security zone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do expect there to be several issues. I expect to make for fairly ugly TV at certain points, but I don't expect the convention to get out of hand.
And some feared that there could be violence on the floor of the convention between some very angry delegates and others. You don't fear that?
I don't. You know, it's
Chicago, 1968.
You might find one or two or three, you know, people who find it, you know,
never cool, Trump. We mean never.
Cool to throw fists or punches or anything like that. But notwithstanding the Republican Party's position on the Second Amendment, there will be magnometers getting into it, and there will be no weapons that will be allowed through the security zone into the convention hall.
Is that hypocritical? I mean, in the Virginia House of Delegates, where I serve, the Republicans, who are the majority there, have insisted that people can take guns right there into the visitors' chamber, which I find horrific, but that is the law. Is it hypocritical for such an NRA-supporting institution as the current Republican Party is, and as your nominee is, to not allow guns in Cleveland?
You know, the security plan is not put in place by the party. It's put in place by the Secret Service, which has the obligation to protect the nominee of the party and to make sure that there are no legitimate opportunities or no successful opportunities for bad guys to make their assault upon the candidate. And so I don't think that was
Well, the really... candidate won't be there till presumably Thursday night, the fourth day of the convention. Mean, they could allow them in the other 3 days.
I suppose. And if you want to call it hypocritical, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you one
better. No, I think it's smart not to have the guns there.
I'll meet you one better and say if I was a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, I would vote to keep him off the floor.
I'm glad to hear that. That's why I guess you're not running for office.
There are certain places that are just magnets.
Absolutely.
And you don't
the
want...
The Capitol, the Supreme Court, the White House.
Yeah, and you just don't want, to have no security plan for a magnet.
I couldn't agree with you more. One of the things, it's interesting to me, you mentioned your delegation, and obviously you're not going to disclose anything that's confidential, but these conventions are interesting things. When we think of a convention, when the ordinary American thinks of a convention, they think of the delegates, the people who are elected in the primaries or the caucuses and chosen in state parties. They're the ones going. And if you say, well, who else is going to be there? They would say, well, the press. Okay, so the delegates, and then there's the press, and maybe some members of the RNC. But it was interesting to me that you mentioned a delegation, and I don't expect you to name your client. Who else goes to these conventions other than the delegates, the press, and the RNC?
Well, let me say this.
Alternates.
There's 2,500 delegates and there's 2,500 alternates. So that's 5,000 people right there. Probably in Cleveland, there'll be somewhere between 17,000, 18,000 people.
Who are the other 10,000 people?
Well, the other...
There's not 10,000 press, and there's not 10,000 RNC.
No, but there will be several thousand press. There will be...
Okay.
You've
got to
like
eight.
Me.
That's half.
I will say...
Who are you? How do you get in?
I will say I will be there with a special interest group.
Okay.
And...
So special interest groups are allowed at the convention. You're not naming the group, and that's fine. But they're allowed to show up even though they are neither delegates nor alternates nor RNC members. They just have an interest in supporting the Republican Party.
Depending on who they are, a special interest group has the ability to make a contribution to the financial bottom line of the convention and earn certain benefits associated
with
that
contribution. They might have a booth promoting their view, for example.
They might have a booth. They might have a suite overlooking the floor. They might have a display right outside the convention center. There are all kinds of opportunities. It's any other convention. Political conventions are no different. At any convention or trade show you go to, there are always vendors, so to speak, that for a fee get to show their wares.
Do they get to be on the floor of the convention, or do they have to stay outside in the hallways with their wares?
Depending on what level they're at, they may have a limited number of floor passes, floor credentials. I don't know this for a fact. You'd really have to talk to the RNC
Just
about that.
Understand how it
but
works.
But I couldn't imagine that if somebody was making a $50,000 contribution that at least one floor pass wouldn't come with that.
Okay, so that's how it
but
works.
But the group that I'm with,
I'm not.
I'm going to tell you, we only have one floor pass among 11 of us that will be in the delegation, so it's got to be shared.
So you're all going to be swapping that floor pass back.
And we're not $50,000 clients.
Yeah, no. Again, I'm not asking you to divulge your clients. One person who will be absolutely noticeably absent in that convention is the governor of the state where the convention's occurring. John Kasich is the governor of Ohio. He is a Republican. Many people have heard of him, maybe not a year ago, but they know of him now because he ran for president. He was arguably one of the last three standing. I might say fourth, since Marco Rubio, who dropped out months earlier, actually beat him in the delegate count. But for whatever reason, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio and a former presidential candidate and the guy in charge of security on the convention in his state, he ain't showing up. That's got to be a black eye for Donald Trump.
It's not a big deal. It's a deal. Okay, it would be better for John Kasich and for Donald Trump and for the convention and for the party if there was complete unity and if everybody showed up and if everybody, held hands and sang Kumbaya on the last night or something like that. Clearly, Governor Kasich is not going to be comfortable with that. I've already explained I give a pass to the Bushes for a certain reason. I give a pass to the National Review Online people for a reason. I don't give a pass to Governor Kasich. I think he's making a mistake on this. I think he'll come to regret it. But, in the grand scheme of things, one governor, even the governor of the home state of the convention, is just not, the all and end all to the whole process.
No, it's not. But the reason they're in Ohio, let's face it, everyone knows the reason. Ohio is the classic swing state in America. Ohio has voted for the winner of the presidency the vast majority of the time. And the Republicans very much want to win Ohio, where, frankly, Hillary Clinton is currently leading by a small margin. Not having John Kasich there, the guy who won the Ohio Republican primary, he didn't win any others, but he won the Ohio Republican primary, that's got to hurt in November, doesn't it?
No, not in November. It'll be a story during the convention, and it may be even be a story until the Sunday talk shows after the convention. But after that, people will say, Governor who? I mean,
it's, not in Ohio. Not in Ohio. I agree. No one cares in Virginia. No one cares in California. But in Ohio, John Kasich is obviously well loved and well supported.
John Kasich, there's a very, very tight Senate race in Ohio, and John Kasich will be on the campaign trail, campaigning for the incumbent Republican senator from Ohio, whose name currently escapes me, John Portman. Yeah, I think it's Portman. Anyway.
Rob Portman.
Okay. So anyway, John Kasich will be on the campaign trail for two full months campaigning for Rob Portman. And as it happens, the Portman votes and the Trump votes will overlap about 95%.
We're going to take another break. Folks, there's still time for you to call in and ask questions of my guests. A lot of times when I have guests, I know people just like to sit back and listen, and that's okay. But if you want to ask Mike Lane a tough question, here's your chance, folks. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a few minutes left. Still time to call in, though, at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. My guest is Mike Lane, my go-to Republican strategist, the president of Intellifin Strategies. He will be in Cleveland, and we're going to have to see if we can get him to give us some insight on the ground while he's there. Mike, Donald Trump is, everyone has to concede, not your typical nominee for president.
No, atypical.
Yeah. And in fact, I went back through history and I tried to find a single presidential candidate who had not held public office of some kind, you know, governor, senator, congressman, a cabinet member, or had been a general, had been in the military.
Okay, so you're bringing Eisenhower in here.
Eisenhower and George Washington, our very first president. Even he had prior service as a leader. I couldn't find one in either party. Dating back to George Washington, there may have been one I missed. What does that mean in terms? I mean, he seems to be making political hands like yourself might call rookie mistakes. And is that fair? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that the campaign has made a lot of rookie mistakes. They have unnecessarily exposed themselves to criticism that was self-inflicted. They seem to be getting a pass on it, though, for a number of reasons. The first reason is that, you know, people realize, or his supporters realize, that he's a rookie and they're not inclined to hold things against him. The second thing is a lot of his supporters don't think the things that I would think would be a mistake were mistakes. And the third thing is, I think there is an overwhelming feeling in the country, not just in the Republican Party. I think Bernie Sanders' candidacy success was reflective of this. There's an overwhelming feeling in the country that, you know what, we've had it with the establishment. We are going with the anti-establishment, and it really doesn't matter who they are or specifically what they stand for. They are, you know, they're not the establishment, and we're going for them. And I think that was both the Trump and the Sanders story of success.
Let me go through some of these mistakes. And I'm not talking about not raising campaign money or not having people on the ground in various states, which is all very technical. I'm not about things.
No, it's not
said.
Technical.
Well,
it's
important.
It's
no.
Meat and potatoes.
I understand.
You know what, Mark?
As a strategist, of course you think it's important. I think it's important, too, having won my race by going door to door a lot.
Let me put it in a phrase that the average American would understand. It's blocking and tackling.
Well, yeah, no, it's very important. But I don't want to drown. I want to just talk about the really obvious things. Many people felt like when he criticized John McCain as not being a war hero.
Huge mistake.
People thought, well, this is a bridge too far. He can attack Muslims and Mexicans and women and nobody cares, but attacking a Republican war hero? And yet today, in today's Washington Post, Mike, he was asked whether he regrets saying it, and he said no. He doubled, I guess tripled, quadrupled down on that. This is a guy who, it seems, cannot, I don't know whether he can't do it as a matter of his own mental whatever, but he can't seem to ever admit he's made a mistake. Maybe he doesn't want to, or maybe he just can't.
No, I think, look, for a long time, it has been a truism of American politics that you don't admit mistakes, that you stand by it or ignore it and move forward. Now, there are some times when mistakes are so egregious that you need to take a pause, suggest that you understand it was a mistake, and then move forward. His previous campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, was one of those ones who
never admit wrong.
Never admit wrong, never a mistake. The good news is that as of about 30 days ago, Corey Lewandowski is now a commentator on CNN.
Yes, so will Donald Trump now start to admit? He's still being paid by the Trump campaign, Corey Lewandowski? That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Separation pay. And that's a violation, I would think, of journalistic ethics.
I would think
CNN would kick him off and say, we're not giving you a dime while you're taking money
you would
from
think,
the campaign.
But you could say it's all Corey Lewandowski, Mike, but today he doubled down on the McCain comment, or yesterday. It's in the press today.
Look, you have to admit, Mark, that his persona, his approach has changed dramatically over the last 30 days since Lewandowski's been gone. He has stepped, in the hole a lot less frequently.
When he's being watched.
Because
sometimes he's tweeting things like taking an anti-Semitic website and copying its tweets, which is still not very smart.
Oh, please. It was stupid, but nobody has ever suggested that Donald Trump is anti-Semitic. Come on.
No, I'm not saying he's anti-Semitic. I'm saying he's stupid.
Yeah.
I'm saying that he can't lay off the Twitter feed.
He saw a cartoon that made his point, and he had no idea where it came from.
And
He didn't check where it came from.
He also copied Mussolini quotes. I mean, the man's a tweetaholic. Let's just face it.
Well, even Mussolini probably had one or two quotes that made sense over the course of a 60-year lifetime.
At Paul Ryan's press, his town hall, the Republicans that complained the most about Donald Trump seemed to complain most about racism. It wasn't about his tax cuts. It wasn't about his flip-flop or whatever on abortion. Their complaints were ban Muslims. Mexicans are rapists. The things he said about women, and there's some really misogynist things he said over the course of his history about women. These are the things that trouble, fair to say, even Paul Ryan. Do they trouble you?
Some of them do. Not all of them do. Look, let's talk about the Muslim quote where he said, okay, we're going to ban all Muslim immigration. And what doesn't get reported, he says, until we figure this thing out.
I
would expect that he would order a review. He would sign an executive order banning. He would order a 30-day review. And in 30 days, we would have a new immigration procedure policy in place for people who come from these areas of the world.
He did say areas of the world. It's unconstitutional to have a religious test.
Well, it's actually not unconstitutional. In fact, we've been doing a religious test for immigration for a long time. No, we've been doing a religious test, Mark, ever since we've had legal immigration granting asylum for people who are facing religious persecution.
Well, that's different.
We have asked them their religion, and we have investigated them in their religion for purpose of verifying their claim.
For purpose of verifying asylum claims.
Right.
That we've never once banned a particular religion.
No. But it would be a 30-day thing, and then we would be in place, and he'd wind up with actually where he is now, which is that, okay, we're going to focus on those areas where terrorists come from. So, no, that one didn't bother me because
his attacks on the judge handling the Trump University case, the American born in Indiana of Mexican heritage.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that
very, very inartfully worded. I would have advised them strongly
That's a euphemistic way of saying it was an idiotic thing to say.
I would have told him not to say it, and I would have told him after he said it not to say it again.
He doubled down.
But what I think what he's really saying, and he just gets it so wrong on the words sometime, what he's really saying is that, you know, given the comments that I've made about the, you know, cartel members, you know, emigrating into the United States and how we're getting the worst of the Mexicans with the cartel sneaking in, that, you know, that this guy is probably misinterpreting what I said, and so therefore he's not going to be a fair judge.
I've said so many racist things that no person of Mexican heritage can be fair to me.
No.
I think what you're saying.
Not that nobody would, but that the judge would not be fair.
Okay. Mike, we're running out of time, but in the last few minutes.
On the women thing?
Yeah.
Certain things, you know, I think what he said about Megyn Kelly was abhorrent, and I would still tell him he needs to apologize for that. I think everything he said about Rosie O'Donnell, you know, there's a certain refuge
you
in telling the absolute truth.
Individuals. There's no problem with attacking individuals. It's when you start attacking all Mexicans, all Muslims, all women, that's when you get in trouble. And
I gotta tell you,
our country's changing, and I think that this kind of stuff that used to be said quietly can't be said publicly. And I think it's going to hurt.
It shouldn't
Donald
be said
Trump.
Publicly, and I think he gets a pass because people know he doesn't really mean. He's not measuring.
We're out of time, Mike.
Politicians,
but thanks
do.
For coming on the show, and I'm gonna check in when you're in Cleveland.
I'll be there.
Tune in Monday.